Dublin's Q102. Now, someone for you to meet. He's Shane Craddock. Inspire Me, Life Wisdom to Pass is the book. He came in with two. One has gone already. They're going like hotcakes here. And Shane is an author, a coach, and a mentor to many business leaders. Has been for 25 years, and that's his new book. You're very welcome, Shane. Thanks for popping
in. Thanks, Scott.
Here, Dublin's Q102.
Nice to meet you.
Now, your focus, I'm reading your blurb. You wrote all this yourself, did you?
Never.
Oh, nice.
No, never. Never. Outsource.com.
Outsource the blurb. Yeah, the blurb is done. Focuses on growth, he says. Mr. Craddock supports clients in a variety of roles as coach, mentor, facilitator, advisor, consultant, etc. And what caught the eye is that you claim, or it appears you claim, that success has a structure, particularly mental. And when you understand that structure and practice it deliberately, great things can be achieved. What's all that about?
It's just a load of rubbish, don't you know?
Is it a load of rubbish? You made it all up.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, see, if you look at simple things, say like a watch has to have a certain degree of structure to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, it's not going to work. So every watch will have certain things in common, you know, especially if they're like, say, mine where it's got hands on it and, you know, it has to have certain structure to make it work. But after that, you can design it in different ways. And anything that works in any context has to have structure. So particularly with a business, you could also say a house or a home has to have a reasonable degree of structure, even in mixed amounts of chaos. Like if you look at my house, loads of chaos, but still has to have some structure in it. So whatever you have in terms of whatever your goals are, you do need to have a degree of structure to achieve your goals. Otherwise, it's not going to be sustainable and you're probably unlikely to achieve it. So you could be trying to climb a mountain, raise a family, have a good career, have an inspiring career, achieve certain goals in terms of your health and fitness. There's a structure to everything.
Mm.
And the trick is, A, to find out what the structure is, and then B, which is the magic bit, is to actually do it then.
Mm.
And that's often the hard bit.
How do you find out the structure?
Just magic. You just make it up as you go along.
Do you?
No. No, I think from experience is probably the best structure if you're that way inclined without that, you know, because I think, you know, you can go off and research things and that will help, like whether it's a book or a course and everything else, but there's nothing like actually doing it. There's a lot of things that people will say are structures or theories. They're not really always, they don't always work in reality.
Mm.
So the biggest thing is trying something, experiencing something and testing it. So from my point of view, if I'm working with people, you know, the first thing you're looking to do is try and identify what are their goals, personal and professional, or even if they're in sports, like what exactly they're trying to get to. And then you look at, well, what are you doing to achieve that? And then from experience, sometimes you'll be able to see what's missing.
Mm.
And then other times you may not. And we might have to try and figure out something new together. And that I enjoy those more, where perhaps that's pioneering ground.
The people who you say, well, sort of, what are your goals? And, it, you know, after, well, I don't know, how many minutes conversation, Shane, you decide, actually, I don't have any. You come across people like that?
100%, yeah.
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 So, like, life is just something that happens to me.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fine. I mean, I was going to ask you,
but is that not okay as well? Because for some people, they just like to coast along. They don't like to have...
Yeah, no, I don't think... I'm not somebody who says you have to be a certain way.
Mm.
And say, for example, in my own life, what I've seen, I've had phases where I had very clear, definite goals. And then I've also had phases where I've had no goals.
Mm.
Not in the way that I might have now.
Consciously?
Yeah. No, I'm saying I'm kind of going through what I would call maybe, you know, flow phase. I might have simple goals, like, for example, you know, going to the gym once or twice a week, but I go through phases, and I've done that deliberately. So I would say earlier in my career, I was probably overly goal driven, and I think that's dangerous. Certainly, I experienced some negative side effects from that, because you can become very blinkered and you can miss out on some of the magic of life, which you could say has nothing to do with goals. But even, you know, I do think, you know, you were asking me outside, Anisha, about my background. You know, up to a certain point, I hadn't heard the word goals until about my mid-20s when I went through my challenging period. And somebody close to me had mentioned it, and I started to look at it. And they kind of put a different context. Look, a goal is as simple as this conversation here. What's your goal? You know, and my goal could be just as simple, and this is the truth. I'm outside, I think, what's my goal here? My goal is to, I've got two. One is to be in the moment as much as I can with you and not in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And number two is to offer some value, hopefully, to the people that are listening.
And you asked yourself all that. You agreed all that yourself, Shane.
Yeah, well, I've learned that from experience.
That's just how you operate.
Now it is, yeah. I mean, it used to be. You arrive in and whatever. No, but like before every interaction, every meeting, I'll always ask myself, well, what do you want out of this, Shane? Or what do you want to do?
And is that even on a personal level or just a professional level?
No, it's personal too, yeah. Which are everything. I don't see a distinguishing line anymore between my personal and professional life.
Yeah, but surely you don't meet a friend for a pint and go, okay, what's my goal with this person?
No, when you say it like that, it sounds very robotic.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not really like that. I might just say, like, sometimes I'll just go into it and say, look, there's nothing there. It's just like, a desert.
Yeah.
But the other times I might be, actually, what do we do tonight? That'd be a bit of fun. And even by asking the question, something might come up and say, you know what, we're going to do this, this, and this. And it's just a bit of crack. It's not robotic, though.
Do you run the risk of being overscheduled and overthought and lacking in spontaneity?
Yeah. But then again, one of my goals, my goal for the weekend is no planning, no scheduling. Do you know, so I can flip it that way.
Right.
Mm. Do you know what I mean? So, and that's it.
But I just think that's really interesting what you said about the weekend, no scanning, no planning, no scheduling. Yeah. And if you ask any mum or dad with, I suppose, kids under the age of 14 listening, they already know child is going to be doing.
You didn't mention children. I'm talking about myself.
Saturday's free week.
No, she listen. Already I can tell you even this weekend what we're doing with the kids.
Yeah.
You know, so that's already done. And their version of goals. But no, look, I think I'm somebody who works with people, Scott, who are very relaxed in any sort of planning goal setting. And some are very over-scheduling type people. And the over-scheduler probably has to relax a little bit. And maybe the under-scheduler just has to come up a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a healthy balance in everything. And I think at the end of the day, we're all different personalities, all different flavors of ice cream. There is no one right way. All that matters is, are you happy with the way things are going for you? And if you are, then whatever you're doing, do
this,
that.
Is this all extremely self-focused or self-centered? I mean, what about working in teams and working with other people and all of those
most leaders I work with will work with teams and people. So in that context, it's hard to lead a team if you're not clear on your goals.
Yeah.
You know, so they both link in. And then obviously if you're working as a leader, what you're trying to get with people is the joy of being a leader. I think if you're a good one, is you help other people to grow. And like one of the biggest problems that I see with clients when I meet them first now in terms of teams and organizations is that they're all running around the place busy, 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 but
everybody's so busy.
Yeah, but they're not going anywhere meaningful.
Mm.
And even by just asking the questions, okay, look, where are we going here? And by asking that question of a room, you'd be surprised at what you might hear back, because even if it's a 10 of, say, team, 10 people or even 100 people or 50, if we get very different answers for the team, that's a problem.
Is that a lack of communication, though, as well? That nobody's actually bothering to see what the other person wants or needs or anything. They're just...
I think lack of communication is there, but what's causing that, I think, is this incessant noise and business. A lot of it's influenced by technology.
Mm.
It's easier than ever to be busy and think you're going somewhere.
Swamped is the modern term.
Overwhelmed and swamped.
Oh, yeah. I am swamped. Yeah, absolutely swamped.
You're swamped.
No, I hear that somewhere. No, I myself am not swamped, but I hear people say, I'm swamped.
Yeah, no, it's the most common word that I hear now. If I said to people, look, noise or mental noise, most people now will go, yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Mm.
But I don't know if that, I don't think that was here 4 or 5 years ago.
I think that
becomes as well has come from, there's now too many ways for people to contact you when you're off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you have your mobile, I mean, I deliberately don't have my work emails on my phone. So, for example,
just switch your phone off.
I do. I actually put on silent a lot. And I actually find
very liberating.
More often, it actually is more often that because I have it on silent in the studio, I leave it on silent.
I had a client in London there a while ago, busy executive, busy leader, and something happened to him which was fantastic. His child took his phone and dropped it into the toilet.
Nice.
And it died.
Mm.
And it took him a week to get another phone back, and he said it was the most productive and enjoyable week that he had in years.
Mm.
So there's something in it. Like with all of my clients, I don't have my work email on my phone either.
Yeah.
So... and I think that's a trend that you're going to see continuing. Because
I think it's
now
banned in France. You can't email somebody after a certain time, a work email. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Well, I know some companies.
But there's a counterbalance to that, Patricia.
Which is
if you can't email someone after 5:30, which is your finish time, then people come into work at 9:15. You can't get them then either because they're late. So don't we have to have the equilibrium on both sides?
Yeah. Why are they coming in late?
Well, but then they're late, so that's a...
Yeah, yeah, but you can't email it because they're not there. And then, you know, people will say you'd finish it.
Well, then you bring them up to the fact they're late.
3 minutes early.
But what I'm saying is, like, when I need to check my work emails at home, if I'm working at home...
Oh, you shouldn't
then
do that.
I'm
that's
getting
bad.
Into the... No, but then I'm getting into the... I know I have to sit down and I only check them because they're on the computer at home and I know I'm going to do some work then and I'm sitting down and I'm starting to do some work. And it just separates...
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. But I think, you know, most people don't seem to have any control over their phone or their email. I think it is, like, it's been proven it's addictive. I think if you watch your own behaviour, it's highly addictive. But I think outside of all of that, I think one of the things that affects, which is coming more to the fore now, is sleep. And, like, sleep is one of the cornerstones in any sort of...
Well, we saw all
the weird, sleep deprived.
Sleep deprived and stressed out. Irish, it was a study of Irish workers, a large, large sample set. And it was an incredible amount of people stressed out as properly defined and agreed to be, but sleep deprived.
Yeah.
And this is the country we are now.
It's not just the country, it's the Western world.
Yeah.
Scott, you know, and I think, but if most people, I think, are sleep fatigued. If you're sleep fatigued, even forget about kids. You can't be at your best. You can't think straight. It's easy to be more overwhelmed, and then it's easier not to be structured. Go back to your point about, you know, success as a structure. When you're tired, you're less inclined to do the things that work, and the things that you normally do, you stop doing when you're tired. So sleep is one of those kind of simple ones that actually has a massive effect even on your overall well-being and your clarity and your sense of purpose and direction.
So it all begins with a good night's sleep.
I think it solves a lot.
The voice you hear is Shane Craddock. He is he's an author, he's a coach, and he's a mentor. Life Wisdom to Pass On is his book, Inspire Me. And when we come back, I want to talk to Shane about particularly about the challenges women experience when they come back to work. How to work through that, what to do, and more importantly, what not to do. Dublin's Q102. Our guest is Shane Craddock. That's shanecraddock.com or at Shane Craddock on if you do Twitter. Now, Shane, what are the main hurdles that women experience when they're coming back to work? And I mean, just coming back to work, what's the scenario? Say after maternity leave or something?
Yeah, but a lot of people say might go back to work after their first baby, but then maybe have a second one. And after the second one, it's sort of like, oh, I might take a few years career break. And then it's much harder.
All that.
To actually walk back in.
So coming back after that
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Well, I think there's parallels in many different ways to different phases of your life. But I think like the biggest, a big thing that I'd work on with my clients would be what I call the inner game. So to me, in everything you're talking about success and structure. So in everything in life, there's an inner game and there's an outer game. The outer game is, I suppose, the skills you might learn, like, say, in this context, in the radio station, there's certain skills you've got to learn from the technology and perhaps presenting. The inner game, though, is what am I saying to myself? How am I internalizing, for example, with regards to my own success or confidence? And if your inner game is off, you're not going to be able to execute whatever talent or ability you have. Now, I think men and women can have similar experiences if they ever take a gap or a break. But what's unique to women for sure, especially if there's a family context or children, is that for whatever reason, I think they take a dent to their confidence. Not all the time, but I think I've seen it a lot with certain clients. And I think it comes down to them first focusing on what's going on inside the person in terms of what are they saying to themselves. And generally, there's a kind of an issue, I suppose, that can flag up later on in career in terms of imposter syndrome, but it links around self-worth. And to me, that reflects in around self-confidence. So a starting point really is to actually, I would encourage all my clients, almost regardless of situation, to go back and look at what have they done before they took the break in terms of their career, in terms of like milestones, achievements, what value did they bring to the businesses that they worked with, and actually to internalize that and recognize it, because that's valuable. And then to have that in their mind, and then to look at the situation when they're coming back in. And I suppose you and I were talking about, Sid, about the mental hurdles and stepping over the line.
Because that's what it is, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that bringing yourself to walk through that door again.
And this is a famous expression by, I think it's Susan Jeffers, like, feel the fear and just do it anyway. And I think, you know, but there's amazing power in actually taking a page and looking back at your career and saying, okay, hang on, what did I used to do? What have I achieved? Look at that, remind yourself, oh, no, that actually was me. Because I think when you get caught up with the distraction of, you know, family and kids, and you're looking at different things, and your mind can play all sorts of tricks on
Shane,
you.
Shane, where do you get the balance, though, between looking at that and agreeing with yourself that actually I did that, I'm actually pretty good, I'm okay, I'm good with that, and not becoming cocky and self effacing and all that kind of stuff. Where is it? How do you teach? How do you get the balance in your own head? You know, I'm a good player.
Well, that, I suppose that's sometimes where maybe outside perspective can help.
Mm.
You know, if you want to bounce it off somebody else, it could be a trusted friend. It could be a mentor. It could be just somebody that you respect. It could be somebody in the business looking to come back in. This is, you know, you just bounce things off them. But in my experience, 90% of people don't have that as a challenge, Scott.
Mm.
It's the rare person who goes into the cocky mode, and they're probably going in that direction anyway. They're probably not thinking.
So is it more on the other side where someone should say to you, actually, you know, you're a pretty good player, actually?
Yeah, most
you've achieved a
lot. Most women I know completely underrate their ability, and that's even outside of taking a break for children. Most women I know, you know, and I'd know very smart, successful women.
And where is that behaviour learned?
Ooh. Where is it learned?
You've got options. You've got their mother, their father, their school, their environment, their whatever.
Or is it inherent in most women? Is it just there? Is that something?
I think it's there. I think it's there in a lot of women. It's also there in men, but I come across it more with women.
Mm.
Where's it coming from? It's probably a longer conversation.
Have you back.
Who knows for sure?
Mm.
But I think, you
know, women afraid to show how good they are? It's not, you know, it's like at variance with this idea, with this sort of perceived role of how someone should behave. Or
no, look, I think most women that I'd be working with would be perceived as being very successful already.
Yes.
They'd have probably high-profile positions.
Yes, and how are they really when you...
Well, I'm not going to do a blanket statement because then people say, oh, no. Shane's working with such and such.
No.
But over the 20 years of my career, right, working with lots of different
people... The observation is,
I would say... most women and people are good at putting on masks.
Okay.
Mm.
And I think that they've figured out, especially in the corporate world, about how to play the game so that you don't really see how I feel inside. And I think there's definitely for most people a level of imposter syndrome, which is, you know, questioning, am I really good enough to be in the position that I'm here?
Yeah, I was just, there was something about that about a week or two ago. There was some survey where they found that most people felt that they were sort of chancing their arm in their chosen career, that they really shouldn't be doing it at all.
Yeah, and also feel, am I worthy to have this position? I've somehow ended up in this really senior position. And it's understandable. But again, that comes down to, I think there's a problem there because A, they're not internalizing success usually. Okay, they're not actually taking time to stop and think, okay, why am I here? It's because I put in the work.
You're there, Shane, because of the Peter Principle.
The Peter Principle, Scott, what's that about?
The Peter Principle is that we're all promoted to the level of our...
no, that's not true.
Of our...
It happened, it might... Well, are you speaking personally now?
No. It's the Peter Principle.
The Peter Principle.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's true. I think in certain situations that might be the case, but I think in most, certainly private companies, I don't see that happening. I think it's really down to... It should be... in my experience, it's based on merit and it's based on skill. And generally, if I look into the CV of somebody, and we're speaking about women in particular, I'll always get a shock at the amount of achievements that I'll see in the CV that they're not actually, they say, oh, you know, they literally just say, I just did that,
it's
whatever.
It's just an old thing. Yeah, I see you've advised millionaires.
Yes.
And what would be the challenge of a millionaire? Clearly not money. Other thing. What are all the things that bother people?
Actually, you know, surprisingly, money can be a big challenge for a millionaire.
Minding.
Same for a billionaire.
Yeah.
No, paranoia.
Paranoia.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to get money. The second thing then is how do you...
But what does it give you when you get this money?
What would you think?
I don't know.
I don't think it gives you anything. I did have a conversation a few years ago.
Does it give you choices?
Of course it would, yeah. Yeah, money is a great thing.
Mm.
It gives you a lot of choices. It gives you a lot of things.
It gives you security as well.
It gives you security. It can also bring you problems.
Mm.
If you get a lot of money, it will bring you problems because if people know you have money, they will look at you through money and they'll always be asking you for money. I know some people who get asked for money every day, which is a pain. I had a conversation about 3 years ago. I was doing a work with a client in the US with a billionaire.
Mm.
And... we had a conversation where, you know, he was saying, you know, fair enough, he's got all the choice and everything else. But he just said that you can't have the conversation with people because they think you're full of it. But he said that, you know, he realized money wasn't it. Most people live and work towards money. Now, I think if people are kind of good in their career, they're generally not motivated primarily by money at all. They're looking to kind of for a challenge or maybe some sort of recognition or just trying to achieve something specific. Money does give you choices, but also money can bring you problems. And I think it's something that needs to be managed. And I think we have, in large, an unhealthy relationship with money in this country. And I think it's something in the Western world that I think we'll be probably seeing more about.
Where do you go then when you need a mentor and a coach?
I have a couple of mentors. I have one mentor in Canada that I speak with every second week, and then I've got another mentor in Ireland, actually, who's a, so the guy in Canada's a man, and mm-hmm. I've got a woman in Ireland that I probably see. I talk to probably once a month, but I might see her once a quarter. Or more often if I need to.
And how did you find those mentors? How did you get them to agree?
Well,
I mean, is there mentor.com apply here, or do you swipe right or left?
Or is there a Facebook group?
There's a possible business idea for somebody listening, because I've often thought about that, and there are things like that emerging now.
Yeah.
You can find mentors anywhere. Mentoring is, what is mentoring? Like, it's somebody who's perhaps further down the line than you, who can offer you the benefit of their experience.
And the other person trusts.
Yeah, and the other person trusts. You have a chemistry, and there's maybe a mutual trust, a mutual respect. Coaching is different, because coaching is probably more hands-on, as you're trying to change a behavior. Mentoring is more reactive, and it's more based on their experience. How do you find them? I think if you start, the first thing is to say, do I need one? And I think everybody needs a mentor. If not one, certainly a couple. For me, I found there was a community in the US that I'm tapped into in terms of consultancy and coaches, and I just started digging in there, and I found a guy. And then in Ireland, it was just a random conversation that I heard actually with a friend who mentioned this person. I thought something resonated in my gut, and I went, I need to talk to that person, and I just kept after them. They tried to push me away, and eventually got them, and over the last 3 years, they've been invaluable.
I know, it's just, I think it could be quite fun, you know, hi, will you be my mentor, please?
mentor parties.
I'm going to say no to that. No.
Meet a mentor.
Meetupmentor.com.
Yeah. You know, what's in it for me? Now, you've got an event on Thursday in Saba in Baggot Street.
Yeah, Saba Baggot Street, which is a fantastic venue, great food there as well, run by Paul Cadden and the team. We've got an event, we ran it for the last 5 years, called Dinner for Ladies Who Don't Lunch. And we have a guest speaker called Bridge O'Donoghue, who has been one of the driving forces behind the success that's Penny's and Primark. She's a legend. You know, I think she's certainly in her 70s, but she's a phenomenal lady, great experience, and still a great driving force. And so you've got a good night ahead. It's actually sold out. We're operating a waiting list. So if people are still interested, they're welcome to go on the waiting list. But we may have a few cancellations over the next 24 hours, but we're delighted to say
it's... Or we may not.
Huh? Or we may not.
We may or we may not.
Not promising anything.
Details online somewhere, Shane, yeah?
Details are actually, you see them on my website, which you mentioned earlier on, ScottShaneCraddock.com. And they're on Eventbrite as well, if you just search Dinner for Ladies Who Don't Lunch.
Yeah, for ladies who don't lunch, time to eat, a lot of them, do they?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of them might, they don't make the time, but I suppose that the metaphor is around people or women who are, I suppose, focused on getting better and achieving perhaps specific goals that they've set. So,
are women more interesting than men to talk to?
Depends on the women. And it depends on the men.
In your experience?
From where
you sit?
Over the last 5 years, I've seen a shift in my own client base. About over 50% of my clients are women now. And that probably reflects across the business landscape. The conversation with men and women is very different in my experience. You know, I think it's logical, but I'd tell you a funny story. I had a male client, when he heard about the dinner, he said, just let me get this straight. You're with about 70 women. And he said to me, what do you talk to them about?
What a great question. What do you talk to them about?
I just said,
why would you talk to them about anything different than what you talk to men about?
Thank you, but I said, they're not aliens.
What a stupid question.
He said, I'm not going to talk about rugby. This is him, I'm not going to talk about rugby. And I said, but sure, of course you can talk about rugby. Some of them are
play
rugby fans.
But Shane had been at an event with 70 men.
Then you'd ask, what would you talk about?
No, we don't talk, we just look at the wall.
Say, good guy. It was a great game.
Exactly, yeah.
ShaneCraddock.com, that's ShaneCraddock.com, at Shane Craddock on Twitter. The book is Inspire Me, Life, Wisdom to Pass On. And we will have him back, because we didn't get half the questions that we wanted.
All right,
Shane, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks,
Drive at 5, Dublin's Q102.
Dublin's Q102.